Welcome to the Six Ways to Sunday podcast, hosted by award-winning television director, documentary filmmaker, author, and speaker Craig D. Forrest. Join Craig for the next few minutes as he interviews leaders, artists, and creatives about trends and insights shaping our digital world and faith-based media. This podcast is produced and brought to you by Matchstick Media International. Now, here's Craig.
Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. We have a great guest. We always have great guests. It's Josh Summers, who lives in Asia, and he's a media creative. Josh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Craig. I appreciate it.
You know what? Josh and I met for a very short period of time, just a kind of a hello, and how are you, at a wonderful conference in Thailand about a month or so ago, and he reached back to me. I've been listening to our podcast, Six Ways to Sunday podcast, and I got introduced to Josh. He sent me some of his materials, absolutely wonderful content on a couple of channels, a couple of different YouTube channels, actually, subscription services. So Josh, tell us a little bit. And by the way, one of them is for ministry and the other makes money. And the make money part helps the ministry part. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Josh, tell me, because I'm not familiar myself. Tell me and tell our audience of listeners, where did you grow up? I know you where you went to college. Talk a little bit about your growing up and early years.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in Dallas, Texas, which is where my family still is. It's where we attended church. And I was very much involved in kind of the worship side. I played piano, guitar. I tried my hand at drums and really liked, you know, the creative expression of music there. And that's what led me to eventually go off to Belmont University, which for those who don't know, is located in Nashville, Tennessee, one of maybe three cities in the U.S. that really specializes in music production, and learned a lot in the process. I mean, I loved going to classes in like studios on Studio Row in Nashville and just learning a lot of that. Some of the stuff that I learned personally was that I love the music business, but I didn't necessarily want to be in it. And just deep into the music business side of stuff, or to be an artist or something like that. I also realized I didn't have quite enough talent to do that, but I still really enjoyed kind of the creative aspects of making something, whether that was music, or later kind of figuring out that I enjoyed video or audio and podcasts, like what we're doing here. And it really kind of set the stage. The education that I got at Belmont, probably couldn't afford it now, but at the time, you know, back in the early 2000s, it was a wonderful way to really dip my feet into the business side of creating and still get a business degree that has very much helped me over the years.
Interesting. And having myself graduated from a small, in the case of Belmont, it's not small, 9,000, 10,000 students. In my case, mm-hmm. my college, Bethany University, was 500. But
Wow.
Yeah, little. But the thing is, there was, in our case, when I was coming through, the cost to go to a private Christian university college was expensive. So maybe that was the same for you. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not so much
as you said, but you know, 15, 20 years ago, it wasn't as bad.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as it is now. Now, I mean, you know, we're always like at the time it felt expensive, and it's always going to get more expensive, I feel like, you know, as inflation and you know, just things grow. But you know, I had thankfully some scholarships to offset that, and then by God's grace was able to pay off the debt fairly quickly by the time I graduated just a few years later.
Very, very good. Now, after Belmont, what happened? What were the next steps? You must have met at some point a beautiful woman and asked her to marry you. So what were the steps then?
Yeah, well, I actually met my wife in high school, believe it or not. So back in Dallas, I'm one of those people that met and married his high school sweetheart. So we got married immediately after I graduated. As a matter of fact, I pretty much skipped my graduation. I did not go to my Belmont University graduation and went to you know, my wedding, which was back in Dallas. And so we got married. She still had 1 year left in university. So she finished that. And that's when we moved off to China. And that was my first time. Like I had studied abroad in Costa Rica, of all places. And but then, you know, this was my first time really living in a new location. And there was just so much to learn being in a cross-cultural context. And living in a place we weren't in, like Beijing or Shanghai. Like we were close to the Kazakh border. Like I could almost climb a mountain and see the Kazakh border from where I was at, the Tajik border, the Kyrgyz border. Like that's how far west we were. But it made for just an incredible experience, not just from a cultural perspective, but also linguistic and culinary. It was fantastic. Great memories there.
The three places that you have just described are all places that I have been to, two of them on assignment, one of them to teach. Kyrgyzstan. Wow. And Kazakhstan. I shot there a documentary for Teen Challenge of Europe, mm-hmm. Eurasia Teen Challenge. And then wow. A couple of years ago, I mean, right before COVID hit, a few years ago, I taught in Dushanbe, in Tajikistan, which is, and for any of the listeners, this is Central Asia, right above India, right above Nepal. And exactly. It is smack, you could throw a dart in the smack in the middle of Asia, and you're going to probably hit Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and all everything with a stan on it. So how did you end up there? Because that's not the conventional way to go for China, right?
No, it's not. I mean, I think, you know, as a Christian, I feel like there's God's hand in a lot of this. The reality is both my wife and I spoke Spanish. So we were actually trying to find a place in the Spanish speaking world. And for reasons beyond my understanding, all of those doors were closed on us. I'm sure we could have forced our way in, but there was nothing available for us, whether it was teaching or anything like that. And the only thing that came available was a connection that my wife had. One of her professors was connected to somebody who had, like, his whole thing was, he had a partnership with a university out in this western part of China, and he would send teachers there and they would send teachers back to their university. And we kind of got caught up in that. It was supposed to just be a year, maybe two. And we ended up living out there for about 10 years.
My goodness. This went from being, you're newly married, I guess, and a 1 or 2 year adventure, let's go try Western China, to you really planted your feet there for quite a while.
We did. I mean, one of the reasons is I actually, that kind of adventure really appeals to me, right? Going to Beijing, where there's thousands of expats, you can go to Starbucks, you can go to McDonald's, you can go to all that's not as appealing to me as being kind of a pioneer, somebody who goes to a place where it's not necessarily easy to live. And that actually worked in my favor when it came to media, because that's where I first started doing like travel related writing. I wrote for Lonely Planet. I started doing like vlog style stuff on YouTube. That was my first kind of dipping my toe into YouTube. And it made it very easy to stand out when I was in a place that nobody knew. Everybody, it's like this black hole of English information. If I tried to do that in Beijing or Shanghai or any other major metropolis, I probably would have just been drowned out by people who were much louder, much better at doing all that stuff. But because I was in such a remote place, it allowed for me to be able to get a little bit of exposure while also learning the craft along the way. Because I look back at, you know, as most people do, I look back at a lot of my early creative work and just kind of cringe, but it's a learning process. It's just part of getting to know what you're comfortable with, how your style, all of that stuff. And that's what I got to do in that location.
What made you, when you look at it now, let me phrase the question this way. When you look back at your material and your clips and how you were vlogging and such, what makes you cringe now about what you were doing then?
I think part of it was storytelling. I feel like I'm a much better storyteller now than I was then. But there's honestly a lot of it that's just comfort in front of a camera, right? Being able to speak in front of a camera, look at a lens and pretend like there's an audience that you're actually looking at in the eye, and speaking with ease, like not, and even now, I think I have a studio here in Thailand and I had to learn how to use a teleprompter because I love scripting, you know, some of the stuff that I do, because I feel like it keeps things tight. It helps me communicate very succinctly, you know, what I want to say. And that was even an additional skill that I had to learn. So if I look back on some of my earlier stuff from, you know, even reading on a teleprompter, I can tell a difference in how I've learned that skill set. So yeah, I think a lot of it was really just comfort in front of a camera and learning how to tell that story and make it look like I'm just speaking to a friend, you know?
Yeah, they say that one of the great skills is to talk to the camera as if it was just one person just a few feet away from you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is so true. And it seems easy to do. And yet if you listen to most people on YouTube or even sometimes on podcasts, like even the verbiage that we use, it kind of shows what we think. So they'll say, "Hey, everyone," as opposed to, "Hey, thank you." Like that, we tend to talk to a large audience because we know it's a large audience that's going to watch or listen to it. But you're right. I think the skill is honing in and making it feel like I'm talking to the one person who's watching or listening to that at that moment.
Excellent. You know, now in these days, there are both for iPads and or tablets, but also for smartphones, all of these apps that will do your script for you, a teleprompter right on the screen, and you can just, and a lot of them are free or very little cost. And talk about someone that's a novice that's starting out. Would you suggest that instead of winging it for them, you know, making it impromptu and looking into a camera, that they prepare maybe some paragraphs so they can speak to the camera? What?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, to your point, you know, some of those teleprompter apps, the craziest one I've seen actually also changes. It goes in and alters your eye line so that you're looking down at your script, but it will alter it so that it looks like you're looking directly into the camera. That just kind of freaks me out a little bit. I don't know if I'd want to do something like that. But for, I think most people, you know, scripting can have its advantages and disadvantages. And I know that it's not the same for everybody. For me personally, even if I'm not scripting something, I want to have at least an outline of what I'm trying to do, the story arc or the points that I'm trying to make, because otherwise it just kind of becomes this, like I'm just ranting or I'm just speaking random things that come to my mind. And I personally don't like watching that. And of course, I want to create something that I myself would enjoy watching and would remain engaged with. And so, you know, for me, I love writing. That's kind of where I started. Like I said, I was writing for Lonely Planet. I was writing for a lot of different websites that I had built and created. So that was kind of the baseline for me, was starting with writing and then moving into some of these visual and audio mediums. And so I wanted to just create something that really communicated succinctly what I wanted to say. And that's where, you know, something like a script came into play. But for a podcast, right? So let's say I've got YouTube, you know, channels that some of them are scripted, some of the videos aren't. But for the podcast, I tried doing that scripted and it just came off really robotic. And so, you know, for the podcast, I've got one called Memorize What Matters that has to do with scripture memory. And I definitely do that off script. Like I've got an idea of what I want to say, or, you know, obviously interviews are kind of off the cuff, like we're talking right now. But I think that that's kind of the beauty of this medium of podcasting, is that it is really conversational. You got somebody that's like in your ears talking, listening. And yeah, I want that to be more conversational than scripted.
Yeah. It's almost like the listener has a cup of coffee or a cup of tea and they're just, sitting at the next chair over, eavesdropping on a wonderful conversation. There was a time where podcasts were very popular, and then they kind of diminished in popularity. And then in the last 5-6 years, they have come back in a big way. Would you agree? And maybe why is that?
Oh, at 100% agree. I mean, that's one of the reasons I'm trying to dive more into podcasts personally. I think there is this intimacy that comes with podcasting from a creator side. Like Craig, you probably know this, like it's distribution, I feel like, is a lot harder on a podcast. Now distribution, I mean, it's easy to get your podcast onto Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all that stuff, but to actually find a new audience is a whole lot harder to do, I feel like, on a podcast than it is on, say, a YouTube channel or a website where you've got kind of that natural search engine where people will find you. And I think things are maybe changing a little bit in that regard. You know, Apple Podcasts is making changes and all that stuff. But I do agree with you that, like, well, I mean, here's an example. So I've got the podcast for Bible Memory. A lot of the stuff that I do, I duplicate it, right? So I do it on video and I publish that on the YouTube channel. And then I also publish it on the podcast. And for those who know YouTube, the back end of YouTube gives you a lot of great analytics. And let's say I do a 20-minute interview with somebody. I can expect now, and I think that, you know, my audience really likes the people that I'm talking to. So, you know, I'm doing really well, I think, if I can get 30 to 40% of people watching that interview all the way through on YouTube. Whereas if I look on my podcast analytics through Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever, I can see that I'm routinely getting 90, 95% listen throughs. Like, there's something about the ability to listen to a podcast when you're doing other tasks, like running or doing the dishes or mowing the lawn or, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, you can do that and still listen. Whereas for the visual medium, I very much have to have your attention, and it's harder to keep that attention when there are other things going on in your life. So yeah, Craig, I completely agree with you. I think that the podcasting platform is exploding right now. I don't know if I can say exactly why that is, but personally, I understand, because I love listening to podcasts.
Great talking to Josh Summers, media creative. Hope you join us in the next episode. We'll pick up where we left off.
You've been listening to the Six Ways to Sunday podcast with Craig D. Forrest, brought to you by Matchstick Media International, dedicated to excellence in media through inspiration, vision, and education. To learn more, visit us on the web at matchstickmedia.org. That's matchstickmedia.org. Your generous donations, large or small, help defray costs for producing this creative podcast. Thanks for listening and subscribing.